There it is. Hi, Saturday, busted pencils, fully leaded, education talk, educated educators talking education. Incredibly exciting Saturday for everybody out there on the Civic Media app, Civic Media radio stations. Hey, and even those people that are out there downloading this some other day of the week, we appreciate you. Love that you're listening to Civic Media, but also we really love that you're listening to Busted Pencils. It's me, Dr. Tim Slecker, with Dr. Johnny Lupinacci and Jacob, chairman of the board. He is there. Fellas, before we get to our guests, I got to check in on my homies, my brothers, my friends, you know, Jacob, what's happening with you, man?
No, hey, Tim, I didn't think I was going to talk much on this one. A little surprised. Saturday's going great. This weekend, you know how it is, Tim. It is Saturday, isn't it?
Well, you know, it is Saturday for those people listening to this on Saturday.
Don't drop kayfabe, Tim. Come on. Anyway, yes, I'm having a good time. I'm looking forward to this one because we've had a lot of science questions recently, at least in the time that I've been around, and you guys have been saving them up. You got someone to talk to. Is there somebody that Johnny and you can introduce when after Johnny says hi?
Yeah, Johnny, let's get quick. But Johnny, how you doing, my friend, over there on the western side of the country?
Hey, I'm doing all right. You know, you pulled me out of vacation this week for class and session. And you know, it was like a cold plunge back into things. And, you know, I'm gearing up for the fall, getting excited to get back in my classroom and, you know, touching base with teachers and friends as we sort of, you know, August our way back into the school year. So I'm doing good. It's been a good week. We're still squeezing the last days of summer out of things. And, you know, out here on the West, we're relatively free from forest fires right now, which has been a first in a really long time. And many summers, this has been, you know, a relatively, you know, smoke-free summer for us. So, you know, knock on some wood. I'll knock on some wood here. But yeah, we're getting ready for fall, not letting it get here too quick. But Tim, we've been having, as Jacob alluded to, we've been having some great conversations and interactions with listeners around one of our favorite topics, right? Mm. Scientific consensus and, you know, navigating information. That's what you pulled me out of vacation for this week, you know, talking about the vast sea of misinformation, the differences between misinformation and disinformation. And I went off on that whole tangent around scientific consensus. So one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite people, right, is here with us today. Tim, let's not let listeners, you know, be in the dark any longer. Introduce our guy.
Yeah, we are so excited to have him back. Yes, he is truly a real-life astrophysicist, Dr. Ethan Siegel. Man, welcome back to Busted Pencils, our friend. How you doing, Nathan?
Oh, thank you, Tim and Johnny. It's always my pleasure to come back, you know, talk with educated educators about all things education relating, even though we're on summer vacation. Well, those of us who teach high school are on summer vacation. Some of us are working all year round, but that's okay. Knowledge doesn't stop, and I'm happy to share it with you any day of the year.
Oh, man, we appreciate it. Okay. There's so much to go over, different things that have been happening, you know, since January. It's like we wake up every day and go, what, really? That's happening? And, you know, how do we make sense of all of those things? Well, you know, because as Johnny was saying, we did a show earlier in the week about misinformation, disinformation, the realities, how, you know, people use emotions to confuse people sometimes, to direct them in a certain way when the facts, if you took time to look at the facts, you might go, oh, what's happening? But more importantly, we're back to having conversations, at least we see, about, you know, science and, well, it depends, and that whole "it depends," I think, is where we kind of want to start, because as we're now seeing climate change, let's go right to climate change. According to this administration and the Environmental Protection Agency, it's no longer a scientific consensus fact that humans are contributing to it. Fossil fuels are part of the problem. Because, Ethan, the science behind making that statement says what?
I mean, so here's the whole thing, right? You're talking about 2025, and oh my God, there's all these like prominent mouthpieces in positions of traditionally scientifically authoritative positions where they're now saying things that are not only extremely non-scientific, but where they're in fact going against what science has established over years or decades or generations or even centuries and millennia to be firmly established truths. And we have to remember, as individuals with brains in our heads and the capacity for critical thought, that it's up to us to choose our highest values. When we go out in the world and we make informed decisions about what we do, how we live our lives, what do we go with? Do we just say, you know what, I'm loyal to these people and whatever they say, I'm going to agree with, and loyalty is my highest value? Or do we say, you know what, loyalty is great, and I'm always going to stand up for my family and my spouses and my country and all the people who are important to me, but I'm also wedded to a higher value. I'm wedded ethically to truth and honesty and what is real. And if you are wedded to those things, you're not going to be drawn in by these emotional traps. You're not going to be drawn in by this seductive, and, oh, maybe COVID-19 didn't originate from a zoonotic spillover event at a Wuhan market. Maybe it was engineered in a lab. Then you say, okay, what does the evidence say? And you go look up all of the evidence and you find like, oh, it's actually overwhelming. You could just look at the genetic code of the virus and know where it came from and how. And that tells us it wasn't engineered in a lab. End of story. Unless you fall for the things you shouldn't be falling for. And you're listening to emotional manipulation and you're listening to a disinformation or misinformation-based narrative, what we call alternative facts in these day and age. Same thing with the climate. You can say, oh, well, you know, some people say blah, blah, blah about the climate. I'm like, yeah, some people say that gravity is just a figment of our imaginations. And some people say, if I didn't have fluoride in the drinking water, I would be astral projecting all the time. And some people say that when you eat a potato, you have little bits of potato floating in your blood vessels. None of that is true. Stay wedded to reality, my friends. Stay wedded to reality, because of all the things we've ever learned in the world, science is the one thing that if you erased all of our knowledge about the natural world and how it worked, you could wake up tomorrow and you could start regathering all that data, all that information, doing the same experiments, making the same observations, using that scientific method, you would reconstruct exactly the same picture of reality. You would draw the exact same conclusions. So don't abandon our one successful method that we painstakingly developed over the entirety of human history just because you feel like you're loyal to what some dumb guy says.
Man, I was just thinking, I was like, wait a minute. So your point, you're saying that, you know, the people who get the most votes don't have the ability to declare truth?
Well, come on, man. We don't vote on reality. We measure it. We go out and determine what it is experimentally. That's the whole reason we do science. It's not because like, oh, I have some theory and he has some theory and who knows who's right. No, we do know who's right because we go out and we measure reality. And a good theory, as opposed to a pseudoscientific theory, is something that actually makes concrete quantitative predictions about what you're going to find when you put nature to the test, when you do your inquiry, when you do your investigation, when you do your experiments, when you make your measurements, when you take your observations, you're going to see, oh, and I got these results, and that's consistent with these sets of theories, and that refutes or invalidates all of these other sets of ideas. So you can have an idea that like, oh, maybe contrarian scientist Judith Curry is right, and the stadium wave theory of temperatures is correct, and there's no human-caused climate change. And then you look at the data and say, oh, that's ruled out. Next And then you say, oh, well, maybe the universe obeys this timescape cosmology where different portions of the universe are billions of years older or younger because of the amount of mass in there. And then you go and measure how does time dilation actually work in these regions of space. And you say, nope, that's right out. Get out of here. And then you say anything you want. Right? This is how you do science. You put it to the test. We find out information about nature by putting the question to nature, whatever form it comes in, whether it's something on planet Earth, whether it's something out there in space, whether it's something in a laboratory, whether it's a natural phenomenon. You go out, you measure it, you gather data, you collect your results, you compare it with your predictions, and then you draw your conclusions based on the full suite of evidence around you. That's the only way to do it.
Johnny, you are nodding away there, man.
Well, I love this because also what Ethan's explaining for us listeners is, you know, the scientific method. And then the part I'd add to that is the great thing is that it's not just one person who does this. The method itself allows for then several scientists to say, hey, that's interesting. Let me run that experiment. Let me replicate that and see what my results are. And that's how we sort of build towards this thing called scientific consensus, where, you know, a large group of people, a mass of scientists, highly qualified experts, run those experiments and then say to us, maybe the day-to-day decision makers, here's a reality. Here's some information you can apply to your decision making. And it's not for just one person. Maybe it starts with one unique scientific experiment, but then replicated. And so we have like diverse perspectives and even diverse disciplines. It's like different kinds of scientists who bring their expert lens, you know, to that information. So I'm a big fan of this, obviously, like love the guest, but also love the topic, right? But, you know, as Ethan said, like we've been doing this for a really, really long time. And maybe sometimes a scientist might not be right because the scientific process helps flush that out. So we ask questions, we put those questions to the test, and then we lean on those experts around the world. But this is kind of like, Ethan, you mentioned, it's 2025. and we are in these moments too where someone might say, well, I don't trust. I think I brought this up on the show recently, like I've noticed an erosion of trust.
Yeah.
And so I just thought like, you know, we're winding down on the first segment, so it'll probably carry us over into the next one. But, you know, listener out there, and even myself, as I'm teaching about the importance of trust in my classroom, I want to kind of have a conversation about, you know, where we can build trust amongst conversations and communities and include science in that. Because to me, it's always been such an important aspect. Truth and trust go hand in hand when we get back.
I would never hit ya. Busted pencils, fully leaded. Education talk, educated educators, talking education. Our guest, Dr. Ethan Siegel. Yes, he's a real astrophysicist. Check out, you know, first of all, just give him a Google while you're listening. You can find all that. But we will let Ethan come back and make sure he tells us about all of the things that you need to experience Ethan Siegel. Ethan, Johnny, though, kind of hit this with the trust. And I think this is one of those issues where from an argument standpoint, when somebody says, look, I just don't trust science anymore. I don't trust it anymore. partially sometimes I'm going to be like, well, that's you making a stupid decision to choose that. And then I realize, though, that when somebody says, I just don't trust science, my push back on them is usually not going to be very effective if I don't acknowledge some sense of going, the mistrust you have is valid. Maybe we should be talking from a different point of view. Just thinking about this, how do we deal with a family member? I think maybe is more importantly, because I know we all have them who are sitting there going, it's been proven that this thing over here is actually false now. And because of that, now I don't trust science. How do you respond to my uncle?
Well, if we're talking about your uncle, Tim, right? And you're saying like, well, you're not going to convince him by appealing to the science, because you're never going to convince him with that because he doesn't trust it. And I would sort of ask you to sort of say, well, is he someone who can be reached? And what I mean by that is, you can't reach everybody because, for example, you're never going to reason someone out of a position they didn't reason themselves into. You have to come at this from the point of view of, I am wedded to factual reality. And if you can share with me what are the facts of reality and we can agree on those facts, then what we can have a conversation about is what is the best, most correct, most scrupulous way to interpret those facts in the full suite of evidence. If you disagree about the facts of reality, I'm sorry, like this is not a conversation where you're pulling up a seat to the table. This is a conversation where you just said, if I don't care about facts, I'm going to live in a fantasy world where you can't convince me of factual reality. And for that person, I would say you don't want to waste your time on that. You don't want to waste your effort, right? The lesson I give to people when they encounter this and they come to me and they say, what do? I say, never waste your time explaining yourself to people who are committed to misunderstanding you. And that's true. Now, if that's not your uncle, right? If your uncle, he is a fact-based guy, he is a reality-based guy, he does value what's real, then I say, then start with the facts. Start with the facts. And if you can agree on those facts, then you can have a sane conversation about where do we go from here. I think there are a lot of valid reasons from what people hear about science for them to maybe not trust some aspects of it, because when you have incomplete information, you're going to draw a conclusion that may need to get revised as you acquire more information, right? Mm-hmm. This happened a lot if you look back to the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, where we're all wiping down our grocery bags and some people are wearing goggles over their eyes because we didn't know how the virus got transmitted. Once we learned, oh, it's droplet-based and aerosol-based, that changed the way we approached it, right? When you say, okay, well, now that we can agree on what the facts are, maybe I object because different scientific people promote different ideas and different theories. And I say, well, here's the thing. Johnny brought up the idea of consensus where all these scientists agree on something, even citing multiple different independent lines of evidence. And I'll say Johnny is right. When we have that, when we have, all the evidence, even from these disparate looking fields, all point to the same conclusion, it gets harder and harder to escape it. Contrast that with something like quantum mechanics. If you go and ask a room full of theoretical physicists like me, what's the correct interpretation of quantum mechanics, you're not going to get a consensus answer because there is more than one correct interpretation. There's more than one interpretation that agrees with all the data. So if you say, well, we have a scientific consensus, look at the basis underlying why we have that consensus. Look at what all the different people from all the different fields that draw the same conclusion are saying, because chances are you're we're actually going to be confronted with a suite of overwhelming evidence where even if you say, I don't trust science, you can counter with, okay, don't trust, verify it for yourself. If you do it scrupulously, you should draw the same inescapable conclusion as long as you're wedded to that same truth and reality that scientists are wedded to.
Yeah. You know, I think it's partially, though, too, is that doubt is what's been kind of sown. It's doubt. And they'll be like, you know, well, it's just I don't trust. It's a doubt thing. I'm concerned that I might potentially, you know, be committed to the wrong information. Or even now to the point, too, where we really have a war based on people trying to say, well, my evidence, all of this is crazy. I think we're putting it in a great place to realize, though, Ethan, hey, look, when the facts are the facts, we got to come up with and say, hey, we're going to go with the facts. When we get back, though, Ethan, okay, I might let you get on the top ropes and get ready because I want to know what you're thinking about AI and energy because I love myself some AI. Busted Pencils, back in a minute. Oh, man, going quickly. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Our guest, our friend, Dr. Ethan Siegel, astrophysicist. Yeah, one of those people. And when you have time, he can talk to you about alternative realities, just not today, because... or alternative universes, alternative realities, because I feel like sometimes, yeah, there truly is, like, I live in my reality over here, you live in your reality over here, and I'm perfectly happy with the way I'm living my life. Johnny, you make fun of me all the time for being a paying member of the Congregation of AI. I feel like sometimes I need to find an AI confessional to potentially lay out there some of my issues, but take it away, Johnny. I mean, help me understand where I'm going wrong.
Well, Tim, and we won't bug Ethan with too much of this because I think, you know, I want us to be good hosts too and give some time to check in with our guy and say, hey, what have you been up to?
Because, yeah, yeah.
You know, I've been, you know, listening to Starts with the Bang and reading, you know, Ethan's stuff. And I'm curious about, you know, habitable planets and all the cool stuff happening in science right now.
I would be so chagrined if I came on Busted Pencils and I didn't give you both full rein to rant about what you're most upset about at this moment in time.
And this is one of those things. So we're going to hog some space right now. Tim and I go back and forth over AI over a number of reasons, but we've come to, you know, a common ground on, you know, understanding how this tool might be a complement to our classrooms and learning environment and even folks out there listening to their careers, to the craft or the, you know, commitment they have to being the best at whatever it is. You know, AI is undoubtedly playing a role in that. And over the past couple of weeks, we've gone back and forth on this. And one of the things that's come up, Ethan, related to science is, you know, always been in the back of a sort of my, you know, I don't know what to call it. One of my calls to education as a scientist is the health of our environment, our healthy relationships as a community, and how truly dependent and interdependent we are on the natural world and how important that is. And, you know, we might make some jokes about it, but obviously politically right now, it's not a high priority and it's almost become, you know, everyday commonplace to just be like, okay, sustainability, okay, the Earth's, you know, carrying capacity to sustain technological growth at the rate it's going, you know, might be problematic. People laugh, say, that's a crazy guy over there. you know, talking about this crazy stuff related to climate change or whatever it is. But, you know, it's come up and you hear in the conversations around AI, our dependency on technology as a civilization, if we could call it that, or, you know, our humanness on the planet. And I had brought up, but Tim, what about the environment's capacity to sustain these technologies? You know, and listeners though, I didn't have a lot of evidence with me on that. So I've been doing some digging recently, but I thought it might be a little bit of a topic because if it's coming up in my life, it's probably coming up in listeners' lives too. When this AI stuff is coming so fast and the rate at which technology is, you know, and computers, high computing chips and whatnot are integrated into our everyday life. You know, I just wondered, like, there has to be scientists asking, you know, saying things about our ability as a planet, where energy comes from or how we're cooling these supercomputers. You know, it just doesn't happen because we snapped our fingers and technology is advanced. So I was wondering sort of your thoughts as a, you know, as a scientist, but also someone with their, you know, fingers on the pulse of, you know, communicating scientific fact out into these conversations. And maybe you can help Tim and I make a little more sense of, you know, my, yeah, but Tim, the environment can't sustain this.
Okay. I mean, so there's a lot to unpack here, right? Yeah. So you're like, okay, I hate AI. He loves AI. Who's right? And the answer is, well, for some applications, you're both right. For example, if I'm asking an AI about a topic that I have very little experience or knowledge about, but that I know the training data for this AI is rich in, then the AI is probably going to give me a good result when I query it, right? If I say like, hey, AI, I have like these sets of medical symptoms, what could it be? It might actually tell me something that goes way beyond my knowledge for what I suspect I might have. But I'd still want to go to a doctor to verify, oh, let's figure out if this is what you actually have, because I don't want to self-diagnose with something that isn't going to be correct and isn't going to help me. If I say like, oh, I don't know that much about economics, but I want to know what are the economic projections of this thing, and I know the AI has been trained on that data, it can do a very good job. On the other hand, if I start asking AI questions about like, hey, I have these ideas in fundamental physics, and even though I don't know any math and I can't do any physics for myself, I want you to tell me, like, would this be a theory of everything? Could this take all of physics beyond the known, right? This is an example of what people are calling vibe physics and what I call AI slop, because you are just getting a whole boatload of nonsense where the AI, being a large language model chatbot, is just feeding you everything it can to keep you engaged with it. So there's good uses of AI, there's bad uses of AI, there's plenty of misinformation you can get from using AI, but as far as the environment goes, look, it's a computationally intensive thing, just like Bitcoin or any blockchain technology is. It's computationally intensive. And that means it is going to use a lot of power. So you can say, well, what kind of power use does me using AI have on the environment and how bad is it? And it turns out, you know, as one individual person, your usage isn't going to make a whole lot of difference. Sort of like, you know, like, well, you're like, what about having a kid versus querying AI? Or what about like, you know, you know, the thing is, we use power. It's not sustainable. We're using it in a non-carbon neutral way. So I would say this is just shortening the timeline for, if we want to mitigate the effects of climate change, you would say, let's get onto sustainable power faster. I can point you both, because you both love evidence so much, that there was a paper published earlier this year by researchers at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. And they found that Bitcoin mining, which is very comparable to the AI used by data centers, increases levels of air pollution harmful to human health. They estimated that if you took about 25 Bitcoin mines, that produces as much pollution as the entire city of Los Angeles. And it turns out that this is not really like, isolated to where you are. They estimated that 2 million Americans are exposed to higher levels of the 2.5 millimeter particles. That's what you used to wear the N95 masks to protect against before COVID came, where people in New York, the Houston, Austin metro area, Northeast Texas, and the border of where Illinois meets Kentucky, as where the biggest extra exposure to these particulates were. They also found that if you have a Bitcoin mine in one state, it might use electricity from a power plant in another state, and the burning of fossil fuels could result in higher levels of these particulates in yet other states. So even if you're not talking about, oh, long-term environment, climate change, right? Air pollution matters. You breathe that. That's what gives you COPD and lung cancer. So yeah, the pollution is a real problem, but like many things, is it the most pressing problem, or are we going to bury our heads in the sand about it because maybe it's more important to fight genocide or fascism or just teach people to care about what's true, right? We can't do it all, so I think it's a problem. I don't think it's the biggest problem associated with AI. I think the fact that people are falling for flimsy information or misinformation or disinformation because it was just served to them and it was easy to get is a much bigger problem than, oh no, now that AI is here, the pollution game is over. Like, come on, man. We still didn't fix the underlying cause of climate change, which is where we get our energy from.
Well, and yeah, and man, we got to get you on for a whole other show on that, because I definitely want you to tell us what you've been doing. But the whole idea of, you know, where are we getting our energy? It's like we're not allowed to have that conversation. And it's so frustrating now to hear, you know, the current administration, and this goes for either administration, is that I get in and go, here's the energy we like. The energy we like is now the only energy you can get. The energy you like, you're not allowed to get that energy. And the reality here is that, hey, we need to be understanding, researching, and developing and looking at all of these ways to produce energy. The idea that wind and solar now has, quote, been defunded makes no sense in a world that needs energy. In that sense, we've got a whole bunch. Ethan, though, what have you been up to? Starts with a bang, all of those things. Tell us all about Ethan's world.
What's going on in the world of Ethan? Well, I can let you know that earlier this year, I had a series of interviews published with Big Think. Those are available for streaming wherever you can get YouTube. They're fantastic. I talk about the beginning of the universe and how far beyond the Big Bang we've gone. Those of you who are interested in if I have any new upcoming books coming out, November 11th is the publication date for my second National Geographic book entitled The Grand Cosmic Story. Bam! The Grand Cosmic Story. And it tells the whole history of the universe from before the Big Bang to the present day, and gives us several different paths we might take into the future, where every time you turn the page, you get a new illustration, new stats about the universe at this time, a story about what's happening right now, and you come forward 100 million years with every turn of the page. So you start before the Big Bang, you come up to the present day 13.8 billion years later, and then off into the future, how's it going to end? What's going to become of us? And what will happen to the rest of the universe in the far future, long after we're gone? It was a pleasure to get to write it. I was in collaboration with Mark Garlick and John Lomberg as illustrators, and it was designed by Will Lidwell. And I'm so excited to share that all with all of you. And for those of you who are like, no, I like it simpler, I've got something for you to look forward to. My first children's book was called The Littlest Girl Goes Inside an Atom. That one's out. I wrote a second one. We're putting it together now. It's called The Biggest Boy Becomes a Black Hole. And so for the little girls and the little boys and everyone in between in your life, go ahead and get these books. I'll let you know at a future date when that one's coming out. We still need to get the illustrator on board to make the illustrations for the second one as beautiful as they were for the first.
Wow. Man, how do you do all this, Ethan? What in the world is going on? Producing,
Must be so busy that my hair falls out.
Well, and again, everybody watching on the YouTube, yeah, check it out. Four bald men with hair on their faces. Come on, man. This is what you call a team representing. I don't know what we're representing, but Ethan, man, make sure to everybody, starts with the bang. You want to check out all of things Ethan Siegel, starts with the bang, your best place to start looking. We're going to make sure that all the links that Ethan just talked about are in this podcast description. Ethan Siegel, man, thanks for busting pencils.
You know, it's my pleasure. All of you listening out there, remember, it's really important that you stay wedded to reality, that you value what's true and what's real, and that when someone tells you something, if you don't trust it, go out, find the facts for yourself, and verify, because reality and what's true out there is independent of all of us.
Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, chairman of the board, Jacob, woo! And me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Loved our last guest, Dr. Ethan Siegel, astrophysicist, laying so much on us, Johnny. But at the same time, I think what is profound with Ethan is that what he delivers with such passion and in depth is actually a very, sometimes a simplicity in understanding that he brings to these things. And, you know, when we're talking about, what's it mean to have a scientific consensus? I think one of the things that I really heard in that conversation today is that within the consensus, there are scientists who are still maybe arguing some stuff.
That's the beauty of it, Tim. When you imagine it, maybe us, digesting it on a podcast or, watching a YouTube video, or maybe you're in a course, you're a college student or even a high school or middle school student, you get bits of information that I've already gone through so many levels of, discussion, deliberation, testing, healthy argumentation. That's the beauty of scientific consensus, of peer review, right? Is that idea of, there are hypotheses, like there are questions posed and say, what if this isn't true and this other thing is real? Let's test it out and see, And so it's really important, I think, to preserve that scientific method, that process, and to see the value in the scientific consensus. This isn't just, the voice that's the loudest or the most popular or, has the most funding behind it. It's experiments that have been replicated by thousands and thousands of scientists from different disciplinary fields, right? So when we say scientific consensus, we say sort of like it's been tested and it's continuing to be tested, because certainly things we thought were real in the past, science has disproved. Right. And we talked about like the Human Genome Project, debunking racism. Ethan himself's come on and talked about, gender identities.
Right.
And, the idea that there's only male or female gender identities is not in line with science. Mm-hmm. And that's not political. That's not like a conservative view or a liberal view. That's sort of like scientific consensus shows us that, the science, the genetics, the biology of these things is far more complex. And that's the beauty of science, is like some scientist, right, expert, does that work, and several other experts replicate those experiments, right, and come up with findings, and then they compare those findings. And it's a process that not just you and I and Ethan or people, that so-called identify as educated have value in, that the general world holds value in. And that's a really important thing, I think, to remember. What I love, Tim, about this, and listeners, I think you could probably relate, is Ethan also reminds us of the importance of our humility, no matter how expert we are, to connect on that human level, to have conversations, to be real, to invest in trust in one another, right? And to have humility, like, hey, we're experts in some things. Educated educators talk at education, but I don't go tell my car mechanic how to fix my car, right? And I'm pretty handy with a car, but I love his example. Like, AI can help a guy like me maybe narrow down some things and feel confident going in and saying, hey, I have these kinds of problems with my car. I think it might be, but then the humility I have to say, hey, there's an expert who's going to do some repair. I can extend that out there, you know, whether it's an issue you have at home with plumbing, you know, you kind of can do some AI work or some YouTubing, but have some humility and call a plumber, right? Yeah. Just same thing when we're getting ready to head back into a classroom. Our highly qualified teachers and school leaders out there, right? They're experts in education and teaching children to read, teaching mathematics. I'm not saying just blindly trust whatever they're doing in classrooms, but have some humility, right? Mm-hmm. Understand that they are experts on curriculum, experts on recognizing the strengths in your child, their diverse learning, you know, and partner with them. I love that Ethan brings that, right? He's real. He's down to earth. He's an everyday guy who knows a whole lot about science and then shares that gift with humility. So I love having him on. It's a gift to all of our listeners. It's certainly a gift to you and I, Tim. Just love these shows where we get to have Dr. Ethan Siegel.
Yeah. Well, speaking of AI, I tried to get it to tell me that I didn't need a new hot water heater. It said, hey, Tim, call a plumber. Yeah. And now it's time for your moment of zen. Control in modern times requires more than force, more than law. It requires that a population whose lives are filled with cause for rebellion be taught that all is right as it is.
Now here we go, dropping science, dropping it all over, riding around the town like I'm riding in my Range Rover. Oh, wait, that's a Beastie Boys song. This is Busted Pencils. Thanks for listening today. And remember to grab great podcasts chock full of fully lit education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you find your podcasts. Of course, you can always find us at the Civic Media website or on BustedPencils.com. Hey, and don't you dare be late for next Saturday, but all week long, make sure you catch Class in Sessions on Wednesday and find us for on Fridays for producer Jacob's Choice. And if you enjoyed today, well, like I said, be there on Saturday, 3 p.m. Central Time, across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.